Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Dr. Byron McClure. Byron is a national certified school psychologist currently redesigning a high school in Southeast Washington, D.C. His work centers around influencing systemic change and ensuring students from high poverty communities have access to a quality education. Dr. McClure has extensive knowledge and expertise in mental health, social emotional learning, and behavior. He has done considerable work advocating for fair and equitable discipline practices for all students, particularly for African American boys. He has designed and implemented school-wide initiatives such as SEL, restorative practices, RTI, and trauma-responsive practices. As a result of his work, his school recently won the 2019 through 2020 Whole Child Award. Dr. McClure has presented across the country as a panelist, featured, and keynote speaker. He believes in the power of dreaming big to make dreams come true. Welcome to the podcast, Byron.
It is a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Yeah, absolutely. And so one of the stories that really resonates with me really centers around me being locked into a position to where I couldn't utilize my own gifts and what I felt that I was bringing, you know, as far as my strengths to the field. Especially now I talk a lot about educators, people in general, being able to use your strengths in your space to improve your situation, your outcome, outcomes for students. And in the district where I was, I have been in that district for about 5 or 6 years, and given my all, one of my top five strengths, you'll hear me talk a lot about my strengths, is achiever and a maximizer. And I want to be, you know, successful, not just for myself, but for the students, for the families, for the community where I'm working in. But as a school psychologist, the expectation was that really you just have to be locked into testing and meeting your needs as a school psychologist. But as a younger kid at the time, I'm seeing, you know, so many things that needed to be tackled, from, you know, disproportionality, from, you know, over referrals and assessments and suspensions and expulsions of certain groups, school culture and climate, consultation, all these different things that school psychologists, we have unique skill sets, but we're locked into, you know, prioritizing testing and assessment. And I didn't fit into that mold. And so I had to make, you know, some tough decisions. Do I stay in a district where I've poured my all and, you know, I've launched programs and initiatives and, you know, different activities for the youth who I work with, or do I tap into my unlimited potential? I'm not only as a school psychologist, but as a person looking to grow and really stick with my mission of improving outcomes. And I had to get out of the trenches. I had to make the difficult decision to step away from there. And was it a tough decision? Absolutely. Was it the right decision? Absolutely. Would I make that decision again? Every single time. Because as soon as I left, I was able to move to a district where I was able to tap in to the power of SEL, where I was able to launch restorative practices, and where the other district was hesitant. They were used to these antiquated practices and not really, you know, wanting to move towards being a pioneer in that space. At that time, no one was talking about restorative practices, and very few people were talking about social emotional learning. But by me taking that leap of faith, I was able to go to a place where I was able to implement these things and really propel the work. Why? For the benefit of students. And most importantly, I was able to say, these are my strengths, and I'm going to bring my strengths into the space to where I work. And so that's tough. that's difficult, right? Because you're leaving your comfort zone, what you've been doing for years, a consistent paycheck, and stepping out on faith. And so I share, this is actually an exclusive. I haven't talked about this to any, not publicly, not with any other podcast or platform. But I think it's important for me to share that story because I'm hearing it, especially during the pandemic, people feel stuck. People feel burnt out. People are tired. People are dealing with their own mental health. People are feeling unappreciated. People are feeling uninspired. And if we are in that space where we are feeling those things, then using myself as an example, I made that leap of faith and it was difficult. It wasn't easy. It was challenging. But now I'm reaping the benefits of that because my mission and the work that I'm doing is aligned. And that's giving me purpose in everything that I'm doing. And I'm honestly, I'm frankly on fire for this work now more than I've ever been before.
Well, thanks for being vulnerable and sharing that story. And as you said, I think a lot of educators resonate with that. You know, they're kind of like, you know, in the, like have one foot on either side of the trench, right? If they're not deep in the trenches, but they're like, well, should I stay here where it's comfortable or should I take the leap and go into a position where I can, you know, my work can be appreciated or I can make a difference. Like I was also in a school that, you know, they'd heard about restorative practices and social emotional learning, but it wasn't really being implemented, right? Or there were certain teachers that were implementing it, but it wasn't being implemented school-wide. And as an administrator at the school, you know, I could tell, you know, it wasn't really, you know, affecting the rate of discipline. And like you were saying, there were a lot of suspensions, expulsions, and, you know, you really need to have that as a school-wide system. And I'm so glad you found a place where that's working and you're able to see the change. And how long have you then been in your current position?
Yeah, so in June, it'll be 5 years.
Okay.
5 years in June, yep.
So you're able to really kind of look back on those 5 years and see kind of the impact of your work.
Absolutely. And even, you know, going back to year one in the new district, you know, it's still new territory. Mm-hmm. It's still foreign. You know, think 5 years ago, people were hearing about social emotional learning, but there was no really, you know, no hard blueprint. Yes, CASEL had a framework and they had released, I think in 2013, the guide of which programs were the most effective. But across the nation, like that was a still relatively new practice. It was a new way of school. The concept of whole child, people were still trying to figure out what that meant. And then, you know, you throw in restorative practices, that was still a new concept. Even to this day, people are still learning. And so me going into a place and saying, look, I think that this is something that can improve. It's a way that can improve outcomes for youth of color. And I think it's a way that we need to move, that we need to adopt it. And to have an administration who says, I'm bringing you in to do just that, and that we are going to give you a safety net and an opportunity to fail. And that might sound harsh, but it's not. It's letting you know that you're going to try these things. Some things might work, some things might not. But use each one of those experiences as a learning opportunity to improve, to enhance the work that you're doing, because we are going to buy in to restorative practices and social emotional learning. And it's going to be a way of how we do school. And of course, over those 5 years, it's been different iterations of it. It's been, you know, high points, it's been low points. But being in a place to where I can fully engulf myself in the work has been sensational.
And I really like how you said the administrators said, you know, they're giving you a chance to fail. It's that fail forward mentality, right? Because I mean, when you're starting a new program like restorative practices, it's not always going to take off at once, or, you know, there's going to be different, you know, phases. There's going to be some teachers that really take off and then others, you know, it takes a little bit of time. So,
absolutely,
I think, you know, them giving you that chance to fail forward, You know, don't worry if it's not perfect to begin with, right?
Right. And really giving me the reins to say, hey, Dr. McClure, go figure it out. We trust mm-hmm. you. We'll provide you with the time, with the resources, the personnel to do it and figure it out, because we see the potential and that it's an investment. And I'll forever be grateful for that investment that was put into it. Mm-hmm. And like you were saying, there were so many opportunities to fail forward. so many opportunities to fail forward. But through that, we really did move forward to where we are. We're still building it out, but we have started to see successes with SEL and restorative practices in our work.
Great. Well, I wanted to talk to you a little bit. On your website, there are some resources for SEL and Black Lives Matters at schools. And so you've been using some of these resources for a while. It's been supporting the work that you do. So tell me a little bit about what those resources entail and a little bit also about the student kind of demographics and kind of what the reduction maybe in suspensions and expulsion has been since you joined your school.
Yeah, absolutely. And at my website, Lessons for SEL, I've purposed that with this SEL work, that it has to be centered from a place that puts racial equity, social justice, culturally affirming practices first and at the center of everything that's happening in terms of social emotional learning. And that's important for a variety of reasons, but going back to my research, and I made a comment earlier that there wasn't that much research and knowledge and programs around best practices in the SEL when it comes to racial equity and social justice and culturally affirming practices. In fact, based on that 2013 initial CASEL guide, there were very few programs that utilized predominantly youth of color in their samples. There was very limited research studies that looked at students from high poverty communities. So the research base at that time was very limited. And so as I created the resources that you'll find on Lessons for SEL, I wanted to make sure that people could go to a place where it's putting racial equity at the center of all of the work. Mm-hmm. And so what you'll find on my website, I provide videos, I provide racial equity cards in collaboration with a great educator out of Delaware. Her name is Wendy Turner. We collaborated and created these cards that link to those core SEL skills, those core competencies within the CASEL framework. And it helps people to begin having conversations. It helps people to consider, how can we infuse racial equity and themes of self-awareness mm-hmm. around social awareness, around responsible decision-making. And so it gives you considerations of what you should be thinking about. That's one resource that's available. We also have, for example, I did a Black Lives Matter video under Black Lives Matter at School, which was the first week in February. And I've been doing Black Lives Matter at my school, I think for the past 3 years now at this mm-hmm. point. And what that is just centering the voice of Black people, of Black individuals, because so often Black voices, the Black experience, were left out of the curriculum, out of school. And so our voices are silenced. And so Black Lives Matter Week at School is a way just to elevate that and bring those voices to the forefront. And they provide resources and tools and curriculums. And so I provide some of those resources on my website, in addition to the Black Lives Matter Week at School website as well. But it's a racial equity page on my website. And it's just all those resources to help people get started. And then the next question that you ask, what's the benefit? Like, these things are great, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. what's the actual proof that these things are working? And as an example, based on some of our work, again, it's constantly evolving, constant iterations of it. But based on our work, we actually just won this past school year the Whole Child Award for our efforts in implementing restorative practices and social emotional learning and really educating the whole child. Now, what that looks like is we saw reductions, drastic reductions in our suspensions and expulsions as a direct result of implementing these restorative practices and social emotional learning. In particular, one stat that just really resonates with me is that we saw a reduction in the amount of repeat offenses, which means that do you have the same students engaging in the same infractions? And year to date, it was less than 2 students that had those repeat offenses, which is remarkable. Another positive stat that we saw an increase in our NC attendance from year to date, which is really big, especially in our school where we struggle with things such as in-state attendance. And this is before the pandemic. But that's important because we saw what was happening was a shift in the culture of our school by addressing students' sense of belonging, by addressing giving students a way to resolve conflict peacefully and prioritizing those needs. We saw more students wanting to come to school. We saw more students having the access to resources to say, hey, I'm having a conflict this day with this student, with this group of students, or with this teacher, right? Or with someone outside of school. I need to have a restorative circle. And by doing that, we gave students a way of saying, hey, you don't have to miss school because of whatever is going on. We can come to the table, have a restorative circle or restorative conversation, and then we can resolve that issue peacefully and put things in place to make sure that there's accountability moving forward. And as a result, we saw positive gains there. And so just in sum, it's been positive. I still say we're in the implementation phase, hoping that we can move towards the maintenance phase, but it's an ongoing process. And I'm not naive to say that we have all the answers because we don't. We fail forward, like I said, so many times, but we are starting to see positive gains and we're going to keep pushing forward with it.
And since you're at the high school level, I mean, you've been there for 5 years almost, and they have, so, you know, the 4 years that your students are at that school, you know, they'll be able to see the changes. And are there community members and parents of the younger siblings that are hearing about this at the middle school level? And, you know, is it kind of trickling down to just kind of at least the what's happening and kind of the changes that have been made? Have you heard any like positive feedback from the community?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And the truth is, by the time students get to ninth grade, you can look at it from a perspective that it's almost too late to be teaching these skills.
Yeah.
Like I just said, we're still in the implementation phase. It took this amount, 4 to 5 years, just to get a strong framework in place. And so what we have been intentional about is pushing down and engaging our stakeholders so that we can start developing those students at the middle school, at one of our feeder middle schools, so that they can have the tools, so that they can have the language. That's such an important thing, the language to access restorative practices, social emotional learning. And so we've actually started going to the middle schools, having events in collaboration with the middle schools. In fact, earlier this week, we just participated with one of the feeder middle schools. I'm sharing the programs that's available at our school. And so our belief is that by pushing down to the feeder schools is that it will then extend up in the work that we're doing. So by the time students arrive, We'll be able to hit the ground running.
Yeah, it's so important to start implementing some of those practices there. And that leads into the next question about some of these clubs, because I was at a school where I was part of getting a club off the ground or talking with a stakeholder that was going to be involved with an after school club, primarily centered around boys of color, but it was open to everybody. And in the pre-chat, you talked to me about a few of these clubs that have been running at your school, and tell me kind of what, and we also talked about one about helping students become academically eligible as well.
Yeah, so the program where we help in the time since that pre-chat, I've thought about several other programs that I've been lucky to do. But I'll start with the one at the middle school. And really that was in my old district. And at that level, there was a new policy that came about, which said that students from the middle school level, as they transition to high school, you had to have a 2.0 GPA in order to be eligible for any extracurricular club activity or sport. That was in like late in the fall. And so there's a number of different ways that you could see that. I perceive that to be a way of limiting a certain group of students. And so what I did by springing into action, I wanted to create an after-school program that helps students in two capacities. The first capacity, it will help students to work towards becoming academically eligible. The second portion of that is getting them actually ready physically, from a fitness standpoint, to transition to the high school level. And that program was sensational. And we actually started with a small group of boys who were ineligible. And so we focused on skills such as resiliency, such as determination, such as identifying your strengths, a lot of the principles that I still utilize now. And then I collaborated with one of the high school football coaches in our feeder pattern at that time. And so we would run that program Tuesdays and Thursdays, where we had after school, it was an hour of academic support, then an hour of physical fitness. Just thinking about this is like such a strong program that we did. I mean, that was Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then after that, we had a partnership to where it was like once a month, or I forget the frequency of it, but we actually put the students on the bus and then went to the feeder high school. They got to meet with the athletic director, with the current athletes. At that time, it was with the current football players. And it really got the kids excited. It gave them, hey, we're working towards something, and then getting an understanding of what it's like to play sports at that next level. And based on that program, we saw that those students became academically eligible, which was powerful. Five out of the six students were eligible to play sports that next year at the high school level. And then we kept that program growing. And then that following year, we saw that group went from just that small group of boys, then it expanded. We had anywhere on any given day, anywhere to 50 to 60 students participating in the program. We had to get, like permission slips, and we had to get a bigger bus. And it was, we brought food in for the kids and we got snacks. We brought in like tutors. It was a solid program. And I think the most powerful stat that I can reference from that, it was through a tweet. And one of the coaches who I had collaborated, shout out to Coach Lush, he sent me a tweet and said, it was a before and after. And he showed a picture of one of the boys when we first visited, and we created posters with our sayings, with our all those skills on it, resiliency, discipline, all of those things. And it was a before and after. And then it was an after pic of him signing to Bowie State on a football scholarship. And the thought is that if we wouldn't have put that work in to say, hey, this is a new policy that came out, but now we are going to work to, even in spite of that policy, to work to get our kids academically eligible, as well as meeting their social emotional needs. Who's to say that that student would have been eligible or had the opportunity? He might have, but then again, he might not have had the opportunity. And so it was just a powerful program. And then just quickly, the next thing I'll say is present day. I'm at the high school where in my current district, I had an opportunity 4 years when I first started out to collaborate with the Men of Strength Club. And that's a club, it's a group of young boys, young men. In collaboration with myself and the Men of Strength facilitator, and we would meet. At that time, it was during lunch. They would provide pizza for the boys, and we would just have honest, real conversations about everything from gun violence to politics to, you know, popular culture and what's happening and things that were happening with them. And it was just a safe space for the boys to come together and discuss what was going on in a mentorship type capacity. I've maintained that partnership with the ministrant. And even I had a call with them this morning. And as we're redesigning our high school, they are actually going to partner with us as we're redesigning to continue building out this work. So that's been a very exciting program and partnership I've been able to help participate in.
Mm-hmm. Well, both of those stories are so powerful to hear how, you know, had you just accepted that rule for the GPA and not done anything about it, that student who just signed wouldn't have been a player when they graduated from high school that was able to sign with the university, right? That probably wouldn't have happened. And then for the ministrant club, it's like these boys, you know, having powerful role models of color, you know, it's so important for the boys to be able to have a place where they can have these conversations. You know, and be able to just find out more, you know, about just life in general, right? As they leave high school, you know, just I think it's so important to have those opportunities, you know, after school. And, you know, I think anybody who's listening to, you know, reach out with to community members is a great idea to get resources. Look at your website for some ideas if they're thinking of starting any clubs with our students. I wanted to talk a little bit about your public speaking. So you said you've done some different state association national conferences. Do you have anything coming up perhaps in the summer virtually or in person?
Yeah, so I'm actually doing an event with Start Lighthouse. Mm-hmm. They're a phenomenal nonprofit that just launched about a year ago. And so I'll be doing the keynote featured session for them next week. Mm-hmm. For them. So I'm excited about that. I have an event with the Wisconsin, and I'm going to butcher the names, Green Bay, Wisconsin State Association. And so I'm going to be speaking with them in April. So mm-hmm. I'm excited about that, discussing racial disparities and, you know, culturally affirming practices with social emotional learning. I have some sessions coming up with some folks in California. I have a session coming up. I talked to someone earlier today in Southern Oregon. So mm-hmm. excited about potentially collaborating with them. Who else do I have coming up? I just completed a bunch within the past couple weeks. I did one mm-hmm. for the National Association of School Psychologists. I had the pleasure of being one of their live sessions. I did one with my district. We have an anti-racist educator platform, and I got to give a talk there discussing how anti-racist SCL can be used as a lever for racial equity. And so I've been blessed and lucky to do a number of speaking engagements discussing these issues. Now, I'm blessed to have a good amount of sessions coming up mm-hmm. To discuss issues that are just so important and that people need help on. People are saying, hey, mm-hmm. like we want to move towards these practices. We don't know how, or yeah. we have a good understanding, but we need strategies and practices so that we can actually move towards, you know, a more equitable education for our students.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And do you have anything about your public speaking on your website, or is it just maybe following you on Twitter that people can find out where and when you're speaking publicly?
Yeah, of course, just follow me on social media. I typically post my upcoming engagements okay. on social media. On Twitter, people can follow me at School Psych Life. Okay. And then at Lessons for SCL across all social media platforms. So Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And then my other Instagram handle, my personal Instagram handle is bmcclure6 on Instagram as well. And I typically post my upcoming speaking engagements there. And I'll probably create on my website just speaking engagements mm-hmm. so that people can access where I'll be speaking there as well.
Great. Out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
Yeah, the one takeaway is don't be afraid to make that leap of faith. It might be difficult, it's going to be uncomfortable, it'll be uncertain, but I'm speaking from a place of I have been able to do this because I took that leap of faith. It would have been easy for me to just be remained locked inside of a box. But when we do that, we're robbing our students, and I honestly think we're doing a disservice of providing our strengths, our talents, our gifts, and the reason why we enter into this space of education or whatever it is that you're doing. And by not tapping into your strengths, you're not bringing who you are and what you can offer to students and to yourself. I think that we deserve it. Like we have to be in a place where we can say it's okay to be in a place of wanting to thrive, wanting to enjoy what we're doing and not face the day-to-day grind and feeling of being burnt out. And you can do that by tapping into your strengths and finding how you can bring your unique strengths into your job, into your everyday practices. And so don't be afraid to say, this is what I'm good at, and this is what I can bring to the table. And if people say, we don't want what you have, then find somewhere where they can utilize you and where you can tap into your strengths. Do it. Don't be afraid. And more importantly, this work is hard. This work is tough. We can be discouraged at times. And I always say, don't quit. Because things might go wrong, things won't work out. But take every opportunity again to fail forward as a learning experience to keep going. And use me as a resource. I'm here and I want to support you all in this work. And thank you for inviting me on and to discuss these topics with you.
Well, you mentioned your social media handles. Can you also provide me with your website so people can find your resources and connect with you there as well?
Yep, absolutely. My website is www.lessonsforsel.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. It was a pleasure talking with you and hearing about your story and the work that you're currently doing.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.